the final frontier. These are the voyagers of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
The preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a gold dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see. My woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those women moan, boys raised on shotguns. We say grace and we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. We can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway night, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land.
butt and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
game is going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office, and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Everybody, you're listening to Shazay's Mad Science. The Mad Science Hotline is open. We got Muddy on here with us. Say hi, Muddy.
Hi, Muddy.
Hi, Muddy. How you doing?
I'm on a ball as usual. If it got any better, my navel would twitch.
Alrighty then. Well, everybody, I hope y'all doing well out there. I put a video in on the Wake Radio chat room and the Shaziz Radio chat room called Static Electricity. It's actually a couple things in that video that are pretty cool. It's one of them showing you how to make a really simple adjustable spark gap using some rubber hose and some electrical wire. Works out pretty good. Anyway, the...
we used to...
go ahead.
ham radio to, as an old-style lightning arrester. We used to just take the signal wire. We'd ground the ground, of course, but we'd take the signal wire that goes up the center of the coax, and we'd make a small box, and we'd break that signal wire, and one end of it would go to one screw, and the other end would go to the other screw, and they'd be pointing at each other, and the tips would be sharpened. And you bring them all the way together to where they just barely touch, and then back them off.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good.
Yep, and if you're transmitting and your audio quality kind of sounds distorted, they back the screw off just another nudge. And that means anything above that voltage that transmits out would spark an arc and not make it to your radio. And
well, the best thing I like about these little spark gaps that I'm talking about is that you don't have any atmospheric interference.
Turn it up, yeah.
Yeah, you get a pretty good smooth spark across there, and really simple and easy to use. But I noticed when you're messing with static energy that you can tune the frequency up and down. But it seems like that if you want a larger punch for your money, so to speak, with the static charge coming across that spark gap, you want it to be as long as you can possibly get it, because for some reason, and you can see that in the video, that whenever I adjust that spark gap in closer, that it while it will pulse faster, it doesn't pulse as hard. You can see the difference in the lighting of the fluorescent bulbs there with the wireless energy bit to it. Now, keep in mind, it was just on a small scale, but it didn't. It did have some wireless energy potential using the Tesla coils that it was pumped into, and I actually had three coils run into series with each other. One of my problems that I could have had with that not to get it to go out any farther was the fact I might have had one or two of the primaries backwards in there. So I had to tinker around with it a bit and swap some wires to see if I can punch it up even harder. But what I was talking about is that I know you'll notice that when the charge, it's like probably about a little half inch to maybe 3/4 inch long spark that'll come across that gap when that static discharges. And when it's shorter, it'll pulse faster, but when it's longer, it'll pulse harder. You can see the light bright up. Do you have any idea why that might be?
Yes, basically the voltage doesn't need to get as high, so it doesn't need to take as long to charge up to that voltage to jump a long gap. It's a short gap. So it doesn't take much voltage to run across it, so it'll charge up several more times as it's
I see what you're saying.
Right. Happen faster instead of having to build up to a higher voltage.
I see what you're saying.
So it changes your frequency, and also on the lower voltage, it's not going to arc as much because it doesn't need to break the gap. That's why I like that adjustable screw gap.
So it didn't have enough time to get up to a higher potential before it actually leaped across that gap is why you're saying it didn't pulse so hard.
Right. It drained before it had time to get up to that higher voltage and started all over again much quicker.
I don't know why I didn't think about that, but that is a really good bit of information, and I can learn from that. Thanks a lot, buddy.
Yeah, no problem.
But anyway, if you notice in the video, I'll show there's a specialized coil that I put together, and I kind of did it off of a few other different styles of coils that I've seen out there, like the Jewel Thief and stuff like that, just on the concept, not actual how it works. However, what I did was I took a transformer and just the coil out of the transformer, the fine windings on the transformer, that's what the actual fluorescent bulb is connected to. And I took some heavier gauge multi-strand wire, and I made two coils going along the side of it. And then I also took and wound the outer side of it with a primary coil with the same heavy gauge multi-strand wire. And the concept of this, when you pulse the very first primary, will make a magnetic field that will energize the secondary that's in the center. And if you notice how when in the video I run these things on the two side primaries, I took and ran those in series with the spark, with the spark gap, so that whenever they when all the other coils were in series with that, when it jumps across that spark gap, you can recapture some of that magnetic field as well. So I'm actually using the energy as I'm using it to pulse the coil to catch some of that back EMF, if you understand what I'm trying to say.
Right. The magnetic power, the electrical power goes into that primary as a lower voltage and the same power, so that means it needs more amps. And your secondary coil has more turns, so it collects that same magnetic field and collapses into it instead, so you have the same power, but a lot less current, but you have a huge voltage.
Yeah, and that's what I'm really
directly proportional
interested
to the amount of windings between the primary and the secondary. If you got 10 on the primary and you got 1,000 on the secondary, you put 10 volts AC to the primary, you're going to wind up with 1,000 volts. It's directly proportional.
And that's what I'm interested in. Voltage is pressure, and so with the pressure, I can actually create some waveforms that I'm interested in. So at this point in the game, I'm not...
High pressure, high voltage, high tension lines.
Yeah,
it's all the same.
I'm not...
That's the pressure. The current is how much flow.
At this point in the game, I'm not looking for current watts and amps, all that. I'm not looking for a lot of power like in the conventional sense that everybody thinks of electricity and what it takes to run a motor. I'm looking for the frequency. Essentially, if you think about any spark of electricity, it sends out a wave. And, of course, you just taught me about the difference of why that short wave doesn't have a powerful ass punch as the longer wave, which makes perfect sense because it doesn't have time to reach its full potential before it actually hits the other side of that spark gap.
Well, in radio, that long wave actually travels farther, and a lot of it is ground wave. And that's getting closer to what Nikola Tesla was playing with.
Yeah.
Your lower frequencies like 80 meters and 160 meters, you can talk around the world, but you're hearing all that static from every lightning bolt and everything like that. But you get up into the higher frequencies, they get more like line of sight. They get closer to acting more like light.
Yeah, and you can adjust them up and down, to actually literally tune the frequency of that wave going out. And that's how I was doing that with that Shaziz coil that I created using the Tesla technology. I had literally four spark gaps on that coil, and I actually had two 800 microfarad capacitors hooked in there, and they were connected to the earth ground. And whenever those things would get to a certain point, when that capacitor was charged up, it would literally discharge itself back to the deck of the coil system itself and add even more of a boost to it. So it almost acted as an amplifier. And I could literally sit there and tune each one of these perfectly so that you could see them. They would pop just like popcorn, right back and forth. And actually change that frequency from just tuning one or more of those spark gaps.
Yeah, flyback from that magnetic field collapsing can actually give you a lot more voltage. It's kind of like when you got a long pipe that's not really bolted down or mounted very much, and you turn that faucet on full, You know, the pressure in that has dropped a little bit because the current is draining it, so you're taking power out the end. But when you slam that valve shut, you better watch out for that pipe. It might hit you.
Yeah, and there's another...
Because it builds up a lot of pressure in the end.
You just hit another key point there. If you actually watch real close in the video, you'll notice that some of the wires are jumping around every time that thing pulses. You'll see those wires jump, just like that pipe you were talking about.
Yeah, that's due to magnetics and static. Basically, the fields around it. It doesn't quite happen with water, but yes, it does. But not to the extent as it does in the wire. I guess because it's due to the lack of the flow of centrifugal force or momentum, it shows up in the magnetism rather than in gravity.
Well, and another thing is, while the video's going, you can see one portion where I put my hand up. I put this little deal at the top of it, like people's putting them ion motors, turbine deals up there on top of their Tesla coils and getting them to spin around.
Yeah, and Apple motors.
You can actually see that thing attract towards my hand to discharge. But while your hand is up there, you can literally feel an ion wind going on up there. You can feel it's like a cool, tingly kind of feeling, but you can actually feel the ion wind pressure off of that before it actually even gets to your hand. So what I'm thinking is that it's pretty much, when you think about static energy, a lot of people don't want static discharges. Like, that's why whenever they're working in companies that make little microchips and stuff like that, they wear these wristbands that will discharge any static down into the ground instead of going in there and messing up that chip.
Yeah, especially CMOS. CMOS is very static sensitive.
Yeah, but see, that's
very low power.
That should have been something to tell people ahead of time, that's a lot of power. Even on a micro scale, if that has enough power or potential to go inside there and mess that that chip up, then there's something there worth looking into. What do you think?
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of a technician. He's got these chips sitting there sitting in the foam, and somebody picks it up to look at it, and they say, "Thank you, that'll be $230. Look at them and say, "What?" I said, "I just picked it up." I said, "Yeah, and you blew the chip." I worked for a watchmaker, jeweler, when I was a kid, as a clockmaker, and I had fun doing that, but he had this sign that I always remembered, this little desk sign. It says, "Please do not straighten up my desk. You will goof up my system and damage parts."
Oh. Yeah. Well,
he was serious about that.
Well, I believe it. And, you know, back when you was kids, everybody's done it. You know, you rub your feet across the carpet and you stick your finger out and put a static discharge on your brother's ear and zap him real good, you know. One of the things that point out during that whole deal is the fact that there's a lot of pressure build up there. When you're talking that high voltage right there, you can actually feel physical pressure as that lightning bolt's hitting your ear. And so
my girlfriend used to wear one of them heavy wool sweaters. Doggone, man, it's okay if you touch first and then kiss, but don't just reach over there. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, well, I'm always shocking my wife whenever I give her a kiss, and I told her, I said, "That's my electric personality, baby."
Sweet honey bunny kissy lips.
She's like, "Ah!" That's what you get being married to a mad science guy, you know. But anyway,
grab a hold of that high voltage tension from the flyback at the back of a TV and charge yourself up, and then go over and do that.
Using the things that I've learned from the Van de Graaff and the Lord Kelvin generator and the Wimshurst generator, I'm also looking into some older technology. Like, there's one that has it goes way back. It's a glass ball, and inside this glass ball, it has some carbon inside there, a little dust of carbon. And when you spin this thing around, the carbon inside the glass would build up a static charge, and a couple people said that it was pretty much the first form of electricity. You know, back in them days, they probably thought it was like wizard tree or something like that. I can't even pronounce it. But I think, I'm looking right now, I think there's actually a picture on the Mad Science chat of this thing, if I can find it. But either way, what it shows me is that it's really super simple to build a static generator. And the RPMs that you could actually get up for a static generator, as far as, you know, yeah, I do have, I got kind of a picture of it. I'll click the link on the picture there.
Yeah, a lot of people think all that static generation by that is due to friction. No, it's actually touching and then separating due to the different electric potentials of the two materials. They touch, they swap some electrons, and then when you pull them apart, you'll see the display of it.
I'm going to post this into a couple different places here. I'm going to post it into this phone call, but I'm also going to post it over there to Shaziz Radio and Wake Radio chat room. Take a look at this picture. I kind of modified it from its original version. That's the way my brain works, you know. Whenever I see an idea such as this, this isn't necessarily my design, because it's actually based off of a really super old design. But if you look at this, you'll see that there's a couple spark gaps on there, and a capacitor, and a glass sphere, and then inside the glass sphere there is another glass sphere that has like argon gas and a couple probes inside there. Well, the idea of this is to pick up the static charge as that carbon is spinning around inside there and charging that capacitor up and sending that back into that bulb in the center, which would be where the argon gas would be in the vacuum to create some plasma.
What does HPR stand for?
Oh, crud, I can't even remember what it was. I'll think about it. I can't remember. Now you got me stumped. And I'm the one that drew it.
Yeah, it looks pretty cool. So it lights up as you kind of shake it around or spin it, huh?
Yeah, you basically, I just a crude design. You'd spin that glass ball by hand, and while you spin that glass ball, the carbon inside there would build up a static charge, which in turn would charge up the capacitor. When the capacitor got charged up, it would zap back in through on the opposite side into that deal, and basically energize the argon gas and create plasma.
Oh, or neon if you put it in there.
Yeah. That HPR has probably got something to do with the actual name of the original design. I can't remember what the name of that. I thought I had a picture of it on the deal, because I usually post stuff like that whenever I find them. But it goes way back into maybe even before the 1800s, whenever they actually had that that ball that they had carbon inside there. And they had a hand crank on it. Whenever you crank that over, it'd build up a static charge, and people could put their hands next to it, and they'd feel the pressure off of the static buildup. But anyway, what I'm saying is, you could actually build a version of a Van de Graaff or a Wimshurst-style generator, and I'm looking into some simpler concepts for actually building a static generator. And if you could get that thing to put out a good enough static charge to actually charge capacitor banks in real time, then you wouldn't have to put near as much energy into spinning that rotor that you would on your conventional generator, because you're not fighting things such as back EMF. What do you think?
I was thinking about we were talking about the multi-state one here a few weeks back. I'd like to. I haven't had time to do too much of my stuff. Matter of fact, I'm in the middle of moving from my other shop into the new one. I ain't got nothing wired, basically set up and mounted, but I've been wiring all that stuff. But that is one of the that's one of the main things on my list of cool things to do, is to sit there and make a multi-stage Windhurst device and play around.
Well, I believe that if you can actually get that done, you'll get a lot of power out of that thing as far as really high voltage and the frequency of that high voltage as well.
What I want out of it is to take all the latent jars, put those things in parallel, and build up a lot of, rather than just the potential or the pressure or voltage. I want many latent jars through many of those deals that'll collect up just as fast, and I want to put a resistor into that on the output, on all the positives to come out, so it doesn't take it all out all at once. So as you're spinning it, only your spark gap is the tuning for the AC going into the primary of a transformer, which will, you know, if you hook it up backwards from the secondary down to the primary, you'll be lowering the voltage. It'll be a step down transformer, and I can get some amps. I think it'd be pretty great because, like you said, the Windhurst doesn't have a mechanical resistance as it's charging. It just kind of spins freely. So I think that's pretty close to an over-unity deal. If it's done in a multi-stage, I bet I can sit there and just let that thing spin with just a slight breeze or something, charge a cell phone or whatever. With the higher voltage coming off, a battery would be a voltage regulator, because every time the amps are drawn out of it, the volume of electrons would drain out of it. That would also lower the voltage. Yeah. So I think it could be a continuous voltage.
Well, because of the ion wind that you feel from a static discharge pressure, that you can literally feel it. You put your hand up at the top of that coil, and you can literally feel that that wind as it's either sucking the wind in from the surrounding area, building a static charge or whatever. But you can literally feel that. I believe that if you got this thing designed right, and if there was a possibility you could actually put it into a vacuum, that you could get this thing to literally run itself after a certain point because of that ion wind from that static charge. If it was in a vacuum with magnetic bearings or whatever, something that would be really super frictionless, that you could get that thing to start spinning on its own as it's spinning, it would build up a really amazing charge as far as I'm concerned. What do you think?
I think it'd build up one nice charge. I think it's great.
And, you know, I've seen these direct drive motors that they got in washing machines, and I ain't never been so impressed with a stator motor than the, you know, they're already right off the store shelf built generators. So in the worst case scenario,
about the X13s, right?
No. I'm talking about like the direct drive washing machines that have the actual stator motor.
Smart drive. They come in Fisher and Paykel's, and I believe in some washers. They say that the guy never has to come out and fix.
Maytag
repairman sleeping in his chair all day.
Well, they're going to those because it's a lot easier than putting a transmission in a washing machine or a dryer. You just have the direct drive going on. But the fact of the matter...
Yeah, you have a wide circumference for leverage, so you don't need speed. You can just sit there and you got the leverage, you change it. It's very, very efficient. A lot less parts to waste friction and... dissipation of heat due to friction and all that stuff. It does exactly what you want, and it is a permanent magnet motor rather than using electricity to create the opposite field.
And
all it brushes. There are no brushes to wear out. The only thing it that would have to wear out would be the circuit board that sits there and generates the pulses on it, kind of like a stepper motor.
Yeah, and outside of jamming this thing up, there's really no way you can burn it up, you know. So even in a bad washing machine, that motor should still be good. And any permanent magnet motor can be used as a motor or a generator. So with that said, keep that in mind. But the guy on YouTube was, he had it hooked to a 5-horse Briggs and Stratton, and he was pulling some massive arcs off of that thing, man. I mean, you're talking about arcs that would burn your house down kind of arcs.
That's why they take all that coils. They say you got three phases, and you take all of one phase that is normally in series, and they wind up wiring them up in parallel. Then they wire up the next phase in parallel and the next phase in parallel, and they put it in star because it's much more efficient on them lower speeds. And
yeah. Well, this particular one that I was talking about, he didn't even have to do any modifications to it at all. He just hooked it.
I know. If he did the modifications, it'd be down there where he could basically charge batteries and use it as a wind turbine. They've made many of them into the wind turbines. If you don't, you're going to wind up at 400 volts or more.
Cool. Stephen Gibbons found a link inside... Let me check this out. This might have to do with that HPR we were talking about. There's a link down here in the chat room.
That's why I like my dual permanent magnet rotor axial flux alternators for the wind turbines, because they're low RPM, because of the diameter. The diameter means the magnet's traveling faster, and basically you're getting a magnetic flux change. That's when the generation occurs, not when the magnet is over a coil. It's when it is entering or leaving a coil. But in three phase, there's always one entering, always one leaving, and one directly over the coil, and one in between the coils. Even though it's a combination of four magnets per every three coils, it just works out that way. So there's never any cogging, and you don't get that... you get a smooth electrical output. But with the diameter, it's easy to customize the RPM for one so that you can match it to the prop, which is very important. If your prop is not matched, you're only going to get 1/4 of the power.
Yeah, well, if you have that static generator on the top of that, it's not going to have to even move fast at all.
Just put a spark cap on that thing and throw it into your primary of your Tesla coil and don't worry about it. You'll light up your neighbor's fluorescent lights and TVs.
Well, this paper right here says compilation of the static dielectric constant of inorganic solids and HPR Frederisky. I'm not sure that that's the same one, but I'll have to look it up. But if you look up the oldest forms of electricity, then maybe that'll come. Let me type that in.
Kind of like the Davis Book of Electricity and Magnetism.
Yeah.
Daniel Davis.
That's another thing. Some of these old books that you get, whenever libraries and stuff are closing down or renewing their stock or whatever, they'll get rid of some of these older books. And some of the old books, like the Aldell's New Electric Library. You'd be amazed at what's inside those books, man. I mean, as far as what they were discovering back in them days, you get more information out of them old style New Aldell's New Electric Library than you would be from going to a modern day college. I mean, because back then they didn't care about talking about stuff. It wasn't suppressed like it, you know, I feel like it is today.
You know, yeah, today you go to college and you start learning about computer chips and all that stuff. You briefly go through Ohm's Law. You briefly go through the semiconductor and how it works and happens inside the barrier. and between the PN junction and how that works. You barely go over that. They actually show you the how the molecules are aligned and all that kind of stuff. And I mean, you do that within the first couple of days. After that, it's all and, NAND, or, exclusive and, all them gates that they got in there. It's all digital from there on out. So they don't really get into how it's doped, how much it's doped. They don't. I'm talking about the. The semiconductor materials. They don't get into all that. They don't tell you about magnetics as much. They don't tell you much about anything, or the amps, or all that kind of stuff. They'll get you into learning how to keep extra signals out by shorting a frequency to ground through a capacitor, which is basically what you see all over the end of everything inside a computer. At the end of every row or of processing and memory, you're going to find a lot of these little capacitors, all of them, every one of them. Because without them, you wind up with noise and all that other kind of stuff. But that's what they teach you today. They don't teach you every, you know. I remember, doggone, I mean, we went to school, we learned, we pretty much learned about magnets and electricity a good portion of the year.
Yeah, I think they pretty much cheat people out of a really good understanding of what electricity is whenever they do that. I don't want to just know the high-tech terminology, I want to know why things do what they do.
That's it. You as a kid, you want to know how and why and how you can reproduce and do it yourself at home. But today's agenda basically has got so much to learn that they have to briefly go over it. And I think they do rook the students out of that.
Well, it gives you, if you can understand how it works, then you have a better way of basically understanding what you're doing when you're messing with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's something I'm wanting to say, but I can't.
Them older books, they teach you more than I learned in school on the basics. So it's just pretty much the same thing. You really want to learn all them questions you had when you first started out? You need to go into the older books. Yeah, a lot of people, they understand transistors and stuff, and their board level and component level technology. The component level technology or technician is a thing of the past now, because it's cheaper to just have replace the board than it is to unsolder the part and put a new one in. So people aren't learning the component level technology anymore. But you can go into them old books, man, you can learn about tubes. And, you know, you can make a tube. It's kind of hard for you to grow silicon and germanium and stuff like that. But, heck, you can go out there and make a tube. You can do it out of a jar if you want. And just put a vacuum on it. Just configure those deals. Different size plates, different size grids, and your different voltages, and put a decent vacuum on it, put a certain gas in there, and you can make that tube light up too.
I've got an Edison bulb that's probably at least 100 years old, and that thing still to this very day works, man. They made things really well back in them days. Nowadays you could go buy a light bulb and very first time you flip that switch, it'll burn that light bulb out.
Yeah, they get you these big value packs of 20 bulbs for $15, and they last 2 weeks. When I was doing the message center signs, gosh, there was one that had like 700 and something bulbs in that stupid thing, and they showed pictures, words, and graphics, and we were playing with combination driver boards, and from down at the ground you can program what you want it to say through the computer. But when those bulbs were long life. They were supposed to be I think some like 50,000 hour bulbs, and it's like, wow. I used to take some of the used one when we would relamp a whole message center sign. Each one of them bulbs pictures, you know, shows pixels for pictures, words, and graphics. So, I mean, you don't want to sit there and go up there and replace some of the bulbs. And now, when it seems like a lot of them are starting to fail, you go ahead and relamp the whole thing. Man, I'd take all them bulbs home. I'd give them out to friends. And they swore that these used bulbs would outlast the ones that they bought for their home, even though they were used.
Well, yeah, they actually have a few bulbs out there, from what I understand, over there in Europe that pretty much last for a long time, a lot longer than they do over here in the States. Anyway, back on the whole static electricity thing, I'm thinking that, and I'm actually looking at a Wikipedia page as well, trying to figure out what the name of that deal was. But if you could build a static generator that would produce a massive amount of static energy, you can charge capacitors rapidly. In that video, you can actually see I didn't discharge that capacitor, which I should have. I'll probably have to do another one and discharge that capacitor. But when those capacitors get charged up, man, the power behind them is amazing. What do you think?
I think it's amazing. What was that Lord Kelvin's generator that used water?
Yeah, that's essentially where you're dropping the trickle-down water down in between some cans, and as that water's falling through, it builds up a static charge that then, in turn, makes it across the spark gap.
Right. It kind of also works. You gotta know capacitance to understand it. I theorized it was collecting electrons on its way down, and the other one, seeing as it came close to another one, it had to pick up the other charge. But that's only like maybe a tenth of it. The fact is, as the static builds up, as your voltage builds up in your buckets, which are kind of like latent jars, and they are opposite, they go to the opposite side. And the tubes that they fall through, it could be soup cans with the top and bottom cut off or whatever you want to do, or a coil wire. When it sits there, it has a charge. So what goes in between it winds up being the opposite charge of that. And depending on how strong that charge is, depends. We'll tell that drop of water how much of a charge to carry down to the bucket. But as it gets closer, your capacitance changes, and as it finishes passing through and leaves, the capacitance changes again, thus raising that voltage to an even higher limit.
Well, you know that you can pretty much go anywhere and get static energy. You know, it don't matter where you're at, what side of the globe, you're rubbing your feet on the carpet, you can shock somebody on their ear with that static buildup. Old experiments like they used to teach in science class where you run a comb through your hair and you can actually pick up paper with it, you know. And there's other ones where you rub a balloon on your head, you can actually send a charge across. Anybody out there could do that. You could, I took and put a can of pork and beans out there, a little metal can on the table, and then rubbed a balloon on my hair, and you could actually see, if you turn the light off, you can actually see a bolt of lightning shoot across that to that can. So, we're talking about energy that's readily available anywhere you go, you know.
Draw it right out of the air. Put you a plate way up in the sky or along bare wires. Or if they can vibrate next to each other, insulated wires, they'll do it as well. Due to the capacitance effect and what they can collect. To me, putting maybe a 20 meg resistor and coming off the outputs down here at the bottom, instead of letting it arc, just put it, you know, put you a good high resistance to the output and set that over to a lower voltage battery. The electron's charge will still be there and it will draw it, but that resistor will limit it. In that Lord Kelvin's generator, water generator, you notice that the water wants to spread out once the voltage gets high, because it's building on the voltage that is already there. But once the spark gap goes, then it has to start over, and it starts down lower voltage and then starts building again. If you can keep it from completely discharging by using that resistor, you can probably keep a nice high voltage on there, and bleed, and that means it's generating at full capacity all the time instead of part of the time. I think that'd be pretty neat to experiment with and see how slowly you can drain that charge up and what the maximum output could be. And pretty much the same thing on the WimSearch device. I'd like to play around with that. That's why I'm wanting to jump in on that.
Well, I also like the idea of the Vandegraaff too, because you can do experiments such as getting a cotton cloth or something like that and rubbing it onto a piece of PVC plumbing and build up a static charge that way.
Yeah. So, well, some people think on the Vandegraaff that you have to have that rubber band tight. No, you don't. It makes its electricity by touching and then leaving the surface. That's where it exchanges the electrons. It has nothing to do with friction or how hard you press it down on it.
No, it'd be the equivalence of rubbing a balloon on your hair.
Yeah, so you could make it a lot more efficient than I see a lot of people do this, making sure that rubber band is tensioned right. Just enough to keep it wiggling where it doesn't knock your brushes around.
Well, and the biggest deal that I can see from what we're talking about actually building a static generator would be the fact of back EMF. You're not going to get the back EMF like you would under a conventional style generator, because you're not, basically, there's no return path for the electrons. It's a one-way trip.
You know, that's something that always confused me. They taught me about two different kinds of EMF, electromotive force and electromagnetic force. Both were EMF. I got confused on that. I never did go back and study to straighten that out. But
well, if you think about
both are basically a parallel, and they do pretty much the same thing. You build up a magnetic flux field around the wire. And if the wire is in a coil, then you have a whole bunch of them channeling it the same way, which becomes a electromagnet. As you build that charge, even a 12-volt battery charging that thing up, if you go to take the wire off the terminal and you're holding that wire, you're going to get one heck of a jolt, because that voltage is going to raise, just like shutting that water off at the end of the water pipe. 12 volts can... It's not the 12 volts that get you, it's the recoil. And that can do a lot of damage.
Well, and by using things like transistors, you can take a small amount of voltage and actually get a whole lot of voltage out of it by turning that switch off and on, like Tesla was doing with the knife switch. And like I said, it's the high voltage that I'm interested in, because of the frequency ranges that basically you can get from that.
That high voltage doesn't have as much loss, because it overcomes, it's not flow. Your resistance is resistance to current flow. It's not resistance to voltage.
And essentially what we're talking about here is basically you're not defying any laws of physics. You're not creating nor destroying anything. All you're doing is moving energy from point A to point B. It's as simple as that. And all waveforms out there are potential energy, and all waveforms can actually be used to charge capacitor banks. It's just, basically like tuning, you got inside your radio you have a variable capacitor and a potentiometer. Potentiometer basically used to raise and lower the power input, or your volume knob, and you got a variable capacitor inside there, which essentially changes the frequency range that allows you to be able to hear, the radio station. Otherwise, all the radio stations are there, you're just not tuned into it. You see what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah, it's called filtering. Basically, a filter is either just pure inductance, which is a coil that you can adjust how much inductance you're playing with, or a RC circuit, which is a resistor and capacitor. It has a capacitive reactance, but when you get into capacitors and coils, that's your best filters. You can build high-pass filters, low-pass filters, and notch filters. For radios, mostly what you got inside those are notch filters. They only let that one frequency. The rest of it gets shorted out. And those are pretty selective, but you lose some of your volume, so they just do more amplification with them.
Well, one of the things that I'm also interested in as far as plasma, you know, if you have a vacuum spark gap that actually has argon in there, you're actually getting a lot less loss than you would actually get from that if it was like an open air spark gap like we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
You ain't got...
I've seen crystal radios power LEDs.
Well, I believe it.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of energy potential in just the ground alone. I've been looking and looking all over through all these different things out here on Google trying to find a picture of that doggone generator that I'm talking about. And I can't remember whether it was in the 1600s or the 1800s. It was pretty long time ago when this guy...
What did it look like?
It was a glass ball that had carbon in it and a handle that would turn it. And you build up a static charge.
About those monopolar generators. I think those are pretty neat. No coils, just a magnet and a disc, a metal disc. That is, when I looked at that, I said, man, that is crazy. I think it's awesome, and looking at it and seeing the way it works, it kind of reminds me of how the Earth rotates and generates a magnetic field.
Well, we use a strong magnetic force to basically get the electrons moving inside the copper wire. Static electricity, on the other hand, is a whole different. Whole different method there.
Yeah, there's many ways to collect it.
Yeah.
The easy ways, because it's readily available.
And if you could get the static generator to produce enough static discharge across the spark gaps that you could actually tune, you could raise it and lower as need be, but you could charge those capacitors real time on demand for usable electricity.
Yeah.
I've typed in every key phrase that I could possibly get. Founders of electricity, antique electricity, and everything. I still can't find that doggone thing. I got a picture of it somewhere on another
computer. Did you type in HPR?
Yeah, I did, but I didn't. Didn't get what I was looking for. There's a lot of devices out there that look like it. But essentially, it's just really simple. It's a glass ball that has carbon dust in the bottom of inside of it. And as you spin that around, it builds up a static charge. And if you touch it...
Another glass ball in the middle with argon and two elements, right?
Well, that's what mine would be like.
Ah, okay.
The original one didn't have the glass ball in there. It was just a glass ball that had some carbon in the bottom of it.
If you spin it too fast, the carbon won't fall. It'll just stick to the outside.
Well, I don't know how fast he was actually spinning it. But either way, it was before the 1800s, I'm sure. I'll try to type something in there.
Just by its design tells me that it would be really easy just to crank it. It'd have to be under 45 RPM, because you start going any faster and the centrifugal force will hold the carbon to the outside of the glass. So it ought to be pretty easy to turn.
Well, I'm not thinking that it's really not going to matter how fast the thing is going.
Hey, let's take a break. Let's throw some music on and fill our coffee cups and empty our bladders.
Yeah, it sounds like a good idea. And I'll see if I can find that on the break. I'll try to put something decent in here. But anyway, static electricity is what we're talking about. If anybody can figure out what it is that I'm trying to say, what that device name is, I appreciate that.
Where's Derpa Derp today?
I don't know.
Good old Justin.
He's probably sleeping in.
Yeah, I did. I can't blame him. I did that two times last week.
All right, stay tuned, everybody. You listen to Mad Science with Shaziz and Muddy.
Can you read?
space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Dr. Sick.
Never mind that.
Why, that's me! Look at me! I'm an old man!
Hey, I'm Dr. Emmett Brown. I'm standing here on the parking lot at...
Thank God I still got my hair! October 26th. And what on earth is this thing I'm wearing?
Wow, this is a radiation suit.
Radiation suit? Of course! Because I'm all the fallout from the atomic wars! This is truly amazing. A portable television studio. No wonder your president has to be an actor. He's got to look good on television.
Whoa, this is it. This is the part coming up, Doc.
No. This sucker's electrical. But I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity.
What did I just say?
The flux capacitor stores... This sucker's electrical. But I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity.
1.21 gigawatts! 1.21 gigawatts! Great Scott! What the hell is a gigawatt? How could I have been so careless? 1.21 gigawatts! Tom, how am I going to generate that kind of power? It can't be done, can it?
Look, all we need is a little plutonium.
Oh, I'm sure that in 1985, plutonium was available in every corner drugstore, but in 1955, it's a little hard to come by. Marty, I'm sorry, but I'm afraid you're stuck here.
Oh, Doc, stuck here? I can't be stuck here. I got a wife in 1985. I got a girl.
Is she pretty?
Doc, she's beautiful. She's crazy about me. Look at this. Look what you wrote here, Doc. That says it all. Doc, you're my only hope.
Marty, I'm sorry, but the only power source capable of generating 1.21 gigawatts of electricity is a bolt of lightning.
What did you say?
A bolt of lightning. Unfortunately, you never know when or where it's ever going to strike.
We do now.
This is it. This is the answer. It says here that a bolt of lightning is going to strike the clock tower at precisely 10:04 p.m. next Saturday night. If we could somehow harness this lightning, channel it into the flux capacitor, it just might work. Next Saturday night, we're sending you back to the future.
crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Alrighty then, we're back. You're listening to Shazia's Mad Science, and the answer to your question, Muddy, was what HPR stood for. So it would stand for Hoxby Plasma Reactor. So basically, you'd be taking a static charge. If you Google up Hoxby Electrostatic Generator, you'll see a whole lot of, in the image section, you'll see a whole lot of images, and you'll understand what it is that we're talking about. Also, during that same search, it pulls up some Van de Graaff Wimshurst designs as well. And so there's a lot of electrostatic generator styles out there that people have put together. And
that's H-A-U-K...
H-A-U-K-S-B-E-E, Hoxby.
Hoxby.
Francis Hoxby, 1706. By the way, you know, there you go. Back in 1706, they were tinkering around with electricity, and they had some pretty amazing things going on. And those static charges, you know, there's an equation out there somewhere that'll tell you how far or how many volts it takes to jump across a certain length of spark gap. And so, you know, like when I was talking about in that video that I did, I talked about I could get the arc to literally be about an inch long inside there. And then when the arc was longer, it would pulse the light bulb harder. So there's a lot of energy potential in there. When that field punches up and then collapses, it sends energy into the secondary, and that's how that light bulb was lighting up. The light bulb wasn't directly connected. It was connected only through the secondary in that coil that I designed. So the magnetic collapse was, it was a high voltage in the secondary, and the magnetic collapse was enough to light that light bulb up. So, are you reading something, or are you just...
No, just browsing those pictures.
Brain quit.
No, just reading those pictures, and then I had to get a sip of my coffee there.
Yeah, there's a lot of information out there. There's actually a picture that I'm looking at that has the Hoxby device connected to a coil of wire that basically like a wireless spark gap kind of deal. So when that Hoxby device is turning and the carbon's rolling around inside the glass, it builds up a static charge, which then goes across the spark gap and hits a coil of wire. If you listen really close in that video that I did, you'll see that you'll hear a hum in that coil that interferes with the camera. I'm going to be doing a video on that pretty soon. But either way, it's some really interesting stuff goes on when you're messing around with high voltage and frequencies.
Yeah, harmonics to the frequencies of your frame rate and all that stuff.
Oh yeah, it definitely interfered with the camera. You could start to see that the camera was going funky there. But I did a video some time back, Death Ray. If you get a chance to go look at it, go watch my Death Ray video. And
I think I remember that.
Yeah, well, it has a built-in capacitor in it. And so it actually stored a charge and was still running after I shut it off. And so I had it pointed towards the camera because I'm trying to show what the camera was going on, you know, with the camera. Before I ever even turned the doggone thing on, it messed up my doggone deal, and it sounded like I'm talking in slow motion. So, you know,
yes, I remember that, yes.
Yeah, it was still running. I went ahead and left that in the video because it was kind of funny, you know. Talk about my death ray. But anyway, that video was about directed energy, and you could see in that video there that whenever I had it aimed towards the monitor over there, that when I turned it on, you could literally see the monitor be disrupted by the energy being directed down that antenna. You know, same way a microwave oven would work, you know, the magnetron and microwave oven. But either way, you know, back on the whole static energy thing, you know, in that picture, the first picture that I put in there, well, the one that I drew together that had a combination of the Hauxbee device with a argon-filled tube in the center that would be energized by that. Now you get some plasma going on. And so you'd actually, at some point, be mixing two separate forms of energy together. You'd have a static charge with the charge, the energy that would be coming off of that plasma itself. And so I was just kind of wondering how that would, I haven't built one, but I think I'm going to mess around now that we know that we could probably make one out of a glass jar, pretty simple.
Your wife's going to have to come rescue you from your shop again.
Yeah.
Kind of like when you're playing with the Tesla coils for days, and you say, oh, is it Monday?
Yeah, I've had a lot of episodes like that out there, man. I mean, I'd literally be out there for days and didn't realize that I'd even been there that long, you know? It only seemed to me like a few minutes.
Yeah, I always done the same thing down at the shop, except I didn't have a Tesla coil energizing me, keeping me up. I just go lay down in this leather outdoor recliner that I got. It's kind of like a lawn chair, but it's all leather and padded. And I lay down in that thing, take a nap, wake up, and go back to work. And, you know, I remember I just count the nights, and I know, yeah, I've been here about 4 days. Yeah.
Well, one of the things,
get a shave.
One of the things that surprised me the most about realizing how long I'd actually been over there was the fact that I never got hungry. Explain that one.
Well, actually, if your body really doesn't... one guy told me chemically, your body really doesn't need to regenerate and do all that stuff to to stay awake and all.
Well,
that
I know
stuff.
That your body.
If you're absorbing energy that is compatible with your body, you don't get hungry.
Your body burns energy to create energy. You have an electric body. So who's to say that if your body doesn't already have enough electricity that it doesn't have to burn so much food?
Yeah, you're burning calories and everything to generate the heat and keep all that stuff there and give your cells energy. But if your body's absorbing energy, you're really not gonna, if your body's already absorbing energy, you don't get hungry.
Well, to me, that sounds scientifically plausible.
Einstein was one like that. They had to constantly remind him to eat, comb his hair. Or, you know.
Hey, I like Einstein's hair. Science hair is cool.
I look at Shaziz and I hear, my hero, Einstein.
So,
it suits you, dude. It suits you.
Anyway, I copied a couple links for some reason or another. Let me copy them again and put them back down in the chat room. Actually, there's a couple different videos. Oh, yeah, one of them was mine, but there was one other video that I wanted to paste in there. I may have already done it. Here. Paste. Ta-da.
You should see me down in the shop. I've been playing with. I take one of them. I used to go into the dumpster over there at the garage door, and I'd get these whole rolls of wire that they only use a piece of it, and it's still wrapped up and wound up like a regular coil that you'd stick in a wind turbine.
Well, you hit another key point
there. I take that spool, and I figure out which way it's going to spin when it leaves my hand, so I do it so it unravels. And I hold one end after I pull out some extra slack, and I sling that sucker way up over the top of one tree. Get down to the other side, I say, yeah, it's about, it's not quite half. I can make another tree. I throw it over that, it comes down, and I tie another wire to it, and I go over like five trees. And I swear, man, I can get a voltage off of that.
Well, you hit another key point there when you said copper wire. It dawned on me what we're talking about, static electricity. Do you realize how little copper wire you'd actually need if you was running a static generator?
Yeah, you wouldn't need much. Wouldn't need much.
The only thing you'd need the copper wire for is if you was trying to make a transformer to either step it up or step it down.
Yeah.
And so, with that said, let's say hypothetically you have a worst-case scenario. The power grid goes down and you need some sort of form of lighting or whatever. You know how to make a Lord Kelvin generator. And so you expand on that, or you know how to make a Van de Graaff or a Wimshurst or the Hawksby device style generator. You expand on that. We were talking earlier about maybe hooking one of these, either the Wimshurst or something like that, to with a multi-stage Wimshurst to a windmill with a blade, or even a turbine made out of an old barrel or something like that. So now you could, at the very least, put enough energy to energize the gas inside of a fluorescent bulb. So there's a one that wouldn't take any kind of copper wire whatsoever to build. You just take some scrap materials or whatever, and you could put this thing together.
All you need is a vacuum and some argon gas.
Yeah, well, you don't even need that if you're just going to be building up the static charge. All you need to do is get you some old pencil lead, you know, and put that inside the glass jar. What's the pencil lead made out of?
It's graphite.
Yeah, so basically carbon?
Carbon and different kinds of carbon, but mostly just graphite. It's got some kind of glue base that holds it together or so.
Well, if you have those...
You can wrap up a piece of charcoal and a piece of wood in aluminum foil and set it in your barbecue grill and make you a nice piece of carbon.
There you go. Get it all nice and black and everything, and then smash it up into a dust and put it down inside there. There's a lot of places where you could actually get carbon, but I think the pencil would be the fastest, easiest one to try out.
Most readily accessed.
Yeah.
If you got a package of pencils.
Well, or those little refillers for the mechanical pencils.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I said, there's a lot of different options there. And if you can't find anything like that, you could get some cloth and some PVC and build you a static generator like that.
Your brother's Etch-a-Sketch?
Yeah, there you go. So, in worst case scenario, and you needed some sort of lighting system, you could build your really super simple high voltage machine without any kind of copper wire other than whatever you're going to use to bring off of your capacitor bank to hook up to something if you want to charge something with it. And I honestly believe if you do this right, that you could get real time energy to charge batteries. Running burgers and so on and so forth. And with the spark gap, with an adjustable spark gap, you could actually tune it. So as far as free energy, there's a super simple source right there. What do you think?
I think it's simple. I think about the simplest one, easiest generator to build is that monopolar, man. It's just take the doggone ring magnet out of a speaker and put a shaft through the middle of it, and where the magnet doesn't have to spin, and then put a metal disc on the other side. You spin the disc. There's no copper coils. There's no nothing. Just a brush on the outside of the circle and a brush on the inside of the circle. You spin it one way, you got one polarity. Spin it the other way, you got the other polarity.
Okay.
When I looked at that, I've seen it before and just kind of glanced over it and didn't even realize that it was a generator. And when Justin brought it to my attention, I was looking at that and I says, what?
If you got any links to that, put some links, because I'd even like to look into that one. But the static generators, there's so many different versions out there. If you take apart a Van de Graaff and actually look inside them, there's really not a whole lot going on. It's a fancier version of rubbing a cloth across a piece of plastic rod or a piece of PVC plumbing. You know, you're just picking up extra electrons, and when it builds up high enough, it'll literally discharge across. And so, with
I remember when I was a kid, my mama, she'd look at me in the morning, and I was tired, and she couldn't understand why. I had a polyurethane blanket, and it was tucked in at the bottom, and I'd hold it up, put some tension on it, rub my hand up and down that sucker, and man, I'd get some 6-7 inch doggone sparks of lightning going to it, and if you move another 2 or 3 inches, you get another one. And I just go ahead, just as you move your hand down, go tick 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 tick, you can hear it, and you can feel it on you. I was so amazed with that, I stayed up all night playing with my blanket, and my mom says, did you sleep well? I was, oh yeah, Mom, I slept well. She figured it out.
And then when you got,
and she took my blanket.
when you got up in the morning and put your socks on, I bet your socks clung to your leg. Yeah, but see, there you go, man. There's an energy source right there.
If she could take my blanket away, I'd have done made I'd have done made all these electrical inventions by now.
There's an energy source there that is super simple, all right? And you don't have to have any high-tech stuff going on in order to be able to do it. So I'm going to work on a few different versions of static generators and actually try to do some videos on them, because I think those would be really beneficial for, you know, worst-case scenario to produce some electricity. And I'm telling you, I know, because whenever I use that Van de Graaff generator, keep in mind that was plugged into the 110 outlet, but you don't have to turn that deal using 110. You could actually turn it using wind or water or whatever and get the same amount. But once that capacitor charged up, that was a pretty large capacitor that I was using in there. And once it got charged up and it would pulse across that deal, that pulse was strong enough that it would energize that secondary and light that light bulb up. And there's a lot of power potential there in that capacitor. And if you short that thing across, you'll hear a pretty loud pop come out of that thing. I mean, there's a lot better capacitors out there than what I was using. I could have used some of the ones that I use on my other coils over there at the lab there. And, you know, like the little 800 microfarad capacitors, or, you know, even higher than that. And the one instance that my wife came running was, I had charged the capacitor up on pretty doggone high, and then I discharged that, and it sounded like a cannon going off. Ain't no joke, man. She came in there like, are you all right? Are you all right? I was like, yeah, I'm fine. Wasn't nothing for her to hear an explosion from my lab or smell smoke and come around, and I'd either start a wire fire out there or blow something up.
I was kind of a geeky kid that stayed to himself, and I remember my sister came in and stole my cassette tapes and taped over them. I got her back, though. I knew what time she liked to watch her favorite little stupid teenage girly TV shows, and I just pulled me off a piece of tinfoil about the size of the screen, and went in there and I said, I held them tapes. I said, these are my tapes. You can still see the writing indents where you peeled the paper off and put your crap on there. Buy your own. Get mama to buy your own. You got enough stupid, you know, pukey music, girly music all over the place. Well, you got to record it off this and put it on my tapes, too. You already got a copy. He said, I didn't do that. And I said, oh, yeah. And then I threw the piece of aluminum foil at the screen. And it stuck by static electricity. Oh. And I walked out of the room. Oh, man. Yeah, she got in trouble. She got in trouble for cussing when she tried to pull that piece of aluminum foil off the screen. Talk about high voltage. Oh, well, yeah.
That was
pretty
good.
Dangerous. I shouldn't have done it, but that's something. You can make a Franklin bell. And basically put a piece of foil on the screen that covers maybe on the old picture tube ones. You could make a Franklin bell and put the, you know, wire up to a piece of aluminum foil that covers maybe a quarter of the screen, and that Franklin just ground the other side of the Franklin bell. And which for those who don't know what a Franklin bell is, you take two soda cans and basically screw them down to a piece of wood or something where it's got a little gap between it, about an inch or so, and then you suspend a aluminum foil ball or a pip ball on a piece of string that's tied to a pencil that goes over the top of it. You put one charge to one can and one charge to the other can. That, Frank, that thing, it'll go back and forth and sound like an alarm going ding a 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 ding.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because I almost forgot about it. Inside that other video, the one I posted up there called Static Electricity, there is a mechanical oscillator using a copper wire and a piece of aluminum foil as a spring. The copper wire is coiled up and like a spring, and it's connected to a heat sink, which is connected to the ground base of the copper tubing that I had going on in there.
Right.
And what that was doing was it would act like the Franklin bell whenever the charge, it would attract it to the deal, and when it did, it would break the circuit over and over again. You see what I'm saying? And causing it to pulse every time it did that. And so there's another.
Thus eliminating the need for Tesla to keep playing with the knife switch.
Yeah. And, you know, you can make as many of these as you wanted, actually, you know, in the same circuit. They would just, when they build up a static charge, attract or repel each, themselves to make and break the circuit. Anyway, static electricity, don't underestimate it. I think that it's pretty much an overlooked portion of the alternative energy. And it's all around us, you know, those static motors that you were talking about earlier, you know, that's basically the way they work, the atmosphere motors. They're working off the static charges, builds up a charge on one side and goes around and tracks to the other and repels and so on and so forth.
Right.
But if you made a high voltage static generator, I'm positive, because I've seen so many of these, Laser Saber did one, Lid Motor did one. I think Laser Saber had the best one as far as torque-wise. He had one that was literally walking off the table. That's how fast the thing was going. And so, if you took and built you a high-voltage static generator, and then you could build a atmospheric motor, static motor, that would basically have enough torque to run a flywheel system to create, you know, a different form of electricity. Now, that's the key. Electricity's all the way around you. It comes in all different waveforms, from 0 hertz all the way up into the kilohertz and higher. It's all energy. It's all potential energy. And using the right receiver, you can tap into that energy. You know, there's people that's made circuits that will literally pick up radio waves as they're coming out of the sky. I think you were doing that back in the day, whereas opposed to modern day, because you had you remember the story you told me about the coil of wire with the LED on it, and you could tell how close your buddy was getting by whenever you'd key up on the microphone, you knew where he was?
Yeah, 234 divided by the frequency wavelength in megahertz, such as 27.185 would be channel 19, comes out to 8 foot 6 inches. So if you did a quad rather than just two legs of a dipole going out opposite directions, which is less efficient, it's only like about if you want twice the power, you go ahead and you build a quad, which is basically a square. So it's one for the total length is 1,005 divided by the frequency in megahertz. So I wound up with pretty close to about a 36 foot. A 36 foot total all the way around square. Having a single wire, non wrapped, but just a loop for a single coil. It's ready to pick up CB frequency already by itself. I put a diode, or germanium diode, which I know now. I could have put just a regular silicon diode in there, and I stuck one of them meters on it, and I found out that sucker pretty much that meter would go all day long, almost pegging. So I had to put a variable resistor or a volume knob for some people. I had to put one of those in series, and adjust its scale. And I had an LED on it at one time rather than a diode or the germanium diode, because I found out you really don't need to be all that sensitive. The diode or the meter, and you can adjust your scale of strength, signal strength that you're receiving. Yeah, I'd know he was coming within about 2 or 3 minutes, because he'd ratchet jaw on that CB. And he was kicking some power when he got to the yard. Or within a block from me, I'd have to start. I'd have to have that variable resistor all the way pegged over for the max resistance.
Well,
he was already pegging everything.
On that note, and we're getting close to the end of the show here. On that note, I want to point out something here. I've been telling everybody about aluminum and its characteristics for quite some time. That the aluminum is a really good conductor of radiant energy. And so instead of using copper wire, what do you think about using insulated aluminum wire, different gauges, to run tests on the same exact thing? Because for some reason...
Less resistance. You can get that enamel wire that is aluminum rather than that copper wire. You can get the aluminum magnet wire, as you would call it, off the... on a picture tube of a TV, the old picture tube TVs, there's a coil
that goes
around the front. Yeah, it's called the degaussing coil. And it's not glued, it's not shellacked, it's not anything. It's just wrapped with electrical tape. You peel that electrical tape and you got ready to use wire that you don't have to peel off and wind up losing some of the enamel off it. And half of them are copper, half of them are aluminum. You can tell just by scraping some off. If it shines white, you got aluminum.
Well, Stone Lee says aluminum breaks down. Well, yeah, I guess after a while it probably would, but...
It shouldn't break down with the enamel on it.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
As long as
it's coated or insulated, because you're not... Basically, we're talking about picking up radiant energy. And one thing about electricity, and you'll find this out, you can actually condition batteries in lead with high voltage. I've been doing it for a long time. That old battery that I've got started off, it had one dead cell, read about 11 volts, and to this very day, I've been using it with 20,000 volts coming off an oil burner igniter that actually feeds back into that battery, but it cleans off those plates, and it has literally
desulfates it with every one of them pulses, and the battery becomes a voltage regulator pretty much.
But either way, there's something to be worth testing in, is getting some aluminum wire, and if it isn't insulated, maybe run some insulator around it. You probably get some old oxygen tube or something like that to slide the wire through there and build you a coil and see how many turns per whatever frequency you want to get, and see if you can pick up some energy. But there's been a lot of folks out there in the alternative energy community now discovering what I've been telling them for a long time about, especially they're doing it with Slayer exciters, about for some reason how they can pick up really good energy using the doggone aluminum. If you go back in my videos, you'll notice there's an aluminum foil pyramid that hangs above my deal. And if you grab a hold of the little fluorescent bulb starter that's full of argon, you can see literally plasma built up in that deal. Because aluminum is a really good conductor of radiant energy. And also the cheap stainless steel, not the 440 stainless steel, which probably it might be just as good, but I've noticed that the cheap stainless steel is also really good for picking up radiant energy. And I think that the reason being is that when those things are made in China over there, they'll put just about any kind of junk inside their metal, you know. It's the, kind of a hodgepodge of metals inside there in order to make their stainless steel. So, you know,
they're not the leader for inventing. They are the leader
in the process of trying to rip you off. They benefit.
They are the leader for reinventing and making it cheaper.
Well, you know, we
wouldn't be near as far without them, you know, so it's a good thing.
Yeah, there's probably all kinds of alloys inside the Chinese cheap stainless steel. And so with that said, you know, there you go. It looks like stainless steel, and it picks up radiant energy really good. It's probably got some aluminum in there, maybe a little bit of galvanized and some regular steel, or who knows what all's in there. Yeah.
Zinc. Yeah.
So we're down to like the last 6 minutes of the show there, Muddy. It's been a fascinating topic there, static electricity. I believe it. People shouldn't overlook it, you know.
Well, you look at the testatica. Now, the testatica is kind of like an Atmo motor and a Wimshurst device kind of built all into one. And people... like the recoils of stuff basically has a little bit more than what you put into it. So that's going into the zero point energy where you're getting over unity. And I believe that is the only self-powered free energy device.
Well, I honestly believe
it makes its own movement. I think that is one not to be overlooked at all. And
I honestly believe you're right, because if you look in that video, I know you can't feel what's in that video, but if you do the experiment yourself, you can literally feel an ion wind being generated by that static discharge. And so with that said, that ion wind, you could have a doggone static motor sitting beside this thing close enough to it where it's picking up that ion wind. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, but the cool thing about the testatica, it's theorized that the energy that it gets comes from neutrinos. Neutrinos pass through the Earth. So these things run day and night, a little less power at night, but they run 24/7, and I think it's great. There's nothing that stops the neutrinos.
Well, and I think another thing is, if you live in a place where you have a humid climate, I don't know if you've ever noticed, when it's humid outside, you get a lot more static buildup, or cold, even cold.
Cold, dry makes static work so much better. And the thing is, when you get into dealing with higher voltage, and especially with sparks, you start to deal with neutrinos. And I think that's a cool thing.
Well, I want to do a few different experiments. I'm going to try to build some crude versions of all kinds of different static generators and see what kind of results I can get out of there, because if I'm correct in my assumptions here, which I believe I am, that if you build your right static generator, you could literally charge up capacitors just as well as you would be with regular, you know, Tesla coil wireless energy or whatever. Because I was getting wireless energy out of it. You could see it wasn't very strong, because when I had the experiment in the other room, I had it adjusted better. And in the process of the move, I got everything out of whack. And so it wasn't on the video working as good as it was when I had it in the other room.
Do this. Get two pieces of wire, because I know we're short. I'll explain it quick. Two pieces of wire. Cut them exactly 8 foot long. Go ahead and that way you'll be in the right band and not have to be worrying about getting another frequency. 8 foot long. Put them in a loop. Make that loop vertical. And the flat side, aim it towards the other one. Take your battery and a file and a nail. And drag that, put them in series, and drag that nail, when you take the nail off and it's not conducting, drag the nail across the file. At the other one, put a diode in series with a speaker and then back to the other end of that loop. And you can drag it across there, and I don't care if for quite a distance, I guarantee you'll be able to hear that little spark that you're dragging across that file.
Yeah. And another good tool to use that a lot of people discount is an old AM radio. If you got an old AM radio, you can, like you're saying, you can hear that there's something going on whenever you're doing that. That's why I like to put the AM radio in with my experiments and my videos, is so that you can hear that there's an actual frequency, a disruption, a wave going on there.
They're pretty wide range or wide band receivers.
Yep. All right, well, we're down to it.
Hear lightning around the world if you get to the right frequencies.
We're down to it. Thanks a lot, Muddy. Everybody, I'll get the podcast up as soon as possible. And there's a lot of links that we posted into the chat room over at Awake and over there at ShazizRadio.com. And so with that said, stay tuned for the Hope Show, and hopefully you'll be able to join me tomorrow for the Knights of the Round Table. Everybody take care. Peace and love.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.